Hello, this is RJ Deacon, founder of the podcast and of counsel to the podcast currently. I'll be moving forward reading some criminal opinions and a few other selected cases like native law that I take a special interest in. I'm now a private criminal defense practitioner and mediation specialist in eastern Montana, but I have an office in Missoula, Montana on the western side. So if you know anybody in the state of Montana that needs a hand, or that might think that one lawyer is cheaper than two lawyers and a judge, holler. My contact information will be at the end of the podcast. I can be found on Avvo at RJ Deacon in Montana, in Glendive, Montana. Would appreciate any reviews, if any of you have any, for the 7 or so years of reading Supreme Court opinions to you. Moving on. Supreme Court of the United States opinion syllabus in McIntosh versus United States. Certiorari to United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. Argued February 27th, 2024, and decided April 17th, 2024. Petitioner Lewis McIntosh was indicted on multiple counts of Hobbs Act robbery and firearm offenses. The indictment set forth the demand that McIntosh shall forfeit all property derived from proceeds traceable to the commission of the Hobbs Act offenses. The government also later provided McIntosh with a pretrial bill of particulars that included as property subject to forfeiture $75,000 in cash and a BMW that McIntosh purchased just 5 days after one of the robberies. After a jury convicted McIntosh, the district court imposed a forfeiture of $75,000 and the BMW at the sentencing hearing. Although the district court also ordered the government to submit an order of forfeiture for the court's signature within a week from the hearing, the government failed to do so. On appeal, the government moved for a limited remand to supplement the record with a written order of forfeiture. The Second Circuit granted the unopposed motion. Back in district court, McIntosh argued that the failure to comply with Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 32.2B2 cap B, herefore I'm just going to say the rule in this case, which provides that unless doing so is impractical, a federal district court must enter the preliminary order of forfeiture sufficiently in advance of sentencing to allow the parties to suggest revisions or modifications before the order becomes final as to the defendant. McIntosh argued that meant that the district court could not proceed with forfeiture at all. The district court overruled McIntosh's objections, finding that the rule is a time-related directive and that the failure to enter a preliminary order of forfeiture before sentencing did not prevent the court from ordering forfeiture because the missed deadline did not prejudice McIntosh. The Second Circuit affirmed in relevant part. The Supreme Court held, decision below is affirmed, and Justice Sotomayor delivered the opinion for a unanimous court. Held. A district court's failure to comply with Rule 32.2B2 cap B's requirement to enter a preliminary order before sentencing does not bar a judge from ordering forfeiture at sentencing, subject to harmless error principles on appellate review. Although the district court did not comply with Rule 32.2B2 cap B when it failed to enter a preliminary order of forfeiture before McIntosh's initial sentencing, the district court retained its power to order forfeiture against McIntosh. This court has identified three types of time limits: jurisdictional deadlines, mandatory claim processing rules, and time-related directives. See Dolan versus United States at 560 U.S. 605, 610 to 611. McIntosh claims that the rule at issue here is a claim processing rule, a mandatory deadline that regulates the timing of motions or claims before the court, and that, unlike jurisdictional deadlines, is subject to waiver and forfeiture by the litigant. See Dolan at 610. The government, on the other hand, argues that this rule is a flexible time-related directive, a deadline that seeks speed by directing public official to act by a certain time, and that, if missed, that does not deprive the official of the power to take the action which the deadline applies, to which the deadline applies. That's Dolan at 611. Non-compliance with a mandatory claim processing rule is presumed to be prejudicial. That's Manrique versus United States, 581 U.S. 116 at 125. That was in 2017. But non-compliance with time-related directive is, in this context, subject to harmless error principles on appellate review. See Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 52A. The court agrees with the Second Circuit and the government that Rule 32.2B2 Cap B establishes a time-related directive. The court in Dolan addressed the proper remedy when a district court misses a statutory deadline to take action related to criminal sentencing imposed by statute that did not specify a consequence for non-compliance. That's 560 U.S. at 611. The court held that the provision at issue was a time-related directive, such that if a sentencing court misses the deadline, it retains the power to act in that circumstance. Other cases similarly have recognized that certain deadlines, if missed, do not deprive a public official of the power to take the action to which the deadline applies. See, for example, Barnhart versus Peabody Cole, Regents Hospital versus Shalala, and United States versus James Daniel Good, Real Property. These cases involve the timing provisions that did not specify a consequence for the public officials' non-compliance with the prescribed deadlines. Several features of Rule 32b2 Cap B lead to the conclusion that the rule is best understood as a time-related directive. First, its plain language contemplates flexibility regarding the timing of a preliminary order's entry, providing the indeterminate command that a preliminary order be entered sufficiently in advance of sentencing, unless doing so is impractical. This flexibility takes the rule further away from the category of rigid and inflexible claim processing rules. See Eberhard versus United States for 546 U.S. 12 at 13, and that's a per curiam opinion. Second, Rule 32.2b cap b does not impose a specific consequence for noncompliance. In contrast, other parts of Rule 32.2, for example, 32.2a, in the absence of such specifications, courts typically will not, in the ordinary course, impose their own coercive sanction for noncompliance with a timing directive. See James Daniel Good again, 510 U.S. at 63. Third, the rule here governs the conduct of the district court, not the litigants. Mandatory claim processing rules ordinarily require the parties take certain procedural steps at specified times. See Henderson versus Shinseki, 562 U.S. 428 at 435. And time-related directives typically spur public officials to act within a specified time. That distinction holds even in the examples that McIntosh identifies, and he has not identified a mandatory claim processing rule that is analogous to Rule 32.2b2 Cap B. McIntosh's contrary arguments are unpersuasive. He points to the rule's use of the word must to highlight its mandatory character, but such language standing alone has not always led this court to interpret statutes to bar judges from taking action to which a missed statutory deadline refers. See Dolan, 560 U.S. at 611 to 612. Construed in context, the rule contemplates some flexibility with its impracticability exception and the indeterminate command that a preliminary order be entered sufficiently in advance of sentencing. Nor does it make sense, as McIntosh claims, to classify a Rule 32.2b2 Cap B as a mandatory claim processing rule, because the government must move the process forward. Although the government plays an indispensable role in the criminal forfeiture process, the rule is directed exclusively to the sentencing court. McIntosh also contends that an affirmance here would deprive the rule of any effect, but a timely objection likely will prompt the district court to enter a preliminary order and, if appropriate, postpone sentencing. A timely objection would, at the very least, result in harmless error review of the rules violation. Finally, because McIntosh has not shown that reading the requirement as a time-related directive would frustrate significantly Rule 32.2's effectiveness, McIntosh's invocation of the rule's purpose to ensure due process and promote judicial economy falls flat. Noncompliance with Rule 32.2(b)(2)(b) is a procedural error, subject to harmless error review. Because McIntosh did not challenge the lower court's harmlessness analysis in either his certiorari petition or his opening brief, this court need not revisit it. The judgment below is affirmed. Justice Sotomayor delivered the opinion for a unanimous court. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to get a hold of me, support my startup of my private law practice, I can be reached at rhodesscholar80@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me on Avvo and drop me either a peer or non-peer review to sort of boost my listings there, I can be found at rjdeacon, that's D-I-E-K-E-N, on Avvo in Glendive, Montana as the home base. Otherwise, nice to be back reading some opinions.